All right, so inner alchemy is the topic, and this is the second gathering where last time we did an introduction around, you know, what was alchemy. We looked briefly at the, you know, where some of the information for alchemy had come from. So things like looking at the work of Hermes, known also as a god, also who has a lot of writings attributed to this particular god, which I suspect was actually groups of men that followed the deity Hermes, who in the Greek tradition was Hermes, and then in the Roman tradition eventually became Mercury, god of communication. But even Hermes stuff was associated before that with Egypt, and very much through the god Thoth was attributed these alchemical understandings and teachings. And then prior to that, Thoth was meant to have stolen them off the emerald tablets out of Atlantis, or so the story goes. But in truth, these alchemical principles, their foundation sits within something that's just called natural law. Natural law is an observable process that you can see every day in nature around you. And that's what this process is. It's a 7-step process, which is a natural process for transformation. It describes the process of a caterpillar moving to a butterfly as much as it describes the process of, you know, a tree going from its seed all the way through and its various things. So it's actually, it's the understanding that when things go through a 7-step process, 7 is like the anomaly within sacred geometry. For every other number from 1 to 9 in sacred geometry, there's a form. There's a sacred geometry form. But 7 has no form. Why? Because 7 is a process. 7 is the growth of things within the earth. This is why 7 colours to the rainbow. 7 types of pretty well all things, like there's 7 great families of crystals. Like when I read that, I'm going, you've got to be joking, there's so many crystals. But when I researched it further, the actual structural bonds inside crystals, there's only 7 forms. There are 7 types of trees, 7 types of ants, 7 types of pretty well everything, because how life manifests on earth is through a 7-fold principle, which is why there's no geometry, because it describes a process. And this process of inner alchemy is just another frame of a 7-fold process for this growth of transformation of life. And so that's really the basis behind it. So what is alchemy? In the teaching of the ancients, you know, they in Latin it was solve et coagula, which basically means kind of dissolve and coagulate. But it really described the process of whenever you need to alchemize something. So to alchemize something is to change its form. Sometimes you're alchemizing one thing in order to get a refined form. An example of this might be, like, you might start off with a potato, which has a density, yeah, as you can imagine. But through a process of alchemy, you break down the potato to its bits, and then you need to boil it, and you put it through distillation processes and all of these, and eventually you end up with like vodka. Yeah. So this is an alchemizing process from something dense into something more refined. It says equally, we hear, you know, the traditional kind of alchemical idea is, you know, lead into gold. Again, this sense of something that's quite dense, that has a lot of impurities, being transformed into something quite fine or rarefied like gold, which is a very pure, and called a noble metal because it has so much purity. It can't actually be mixed with anything in a way that transform it. Like if you add gold to anything, into any jewelry, mix it with other metals, if you melt it down again, you can still get pure gold back because it doesn't transform. It's what's known as a noble metal. It's a pure metal. Not corruptible, not changeable, because it's gone to the pinnacle of its refinement, its true essence, if you want to give it that nature. Okay, and so this alchemical process is just that. It's a process of refinement, and it goes through particular steps, and typically, you know, we go through it many, many times to achieve levels of refinement or elevation. You know, the alchemists understood it, they called it the magnum opus, the great work, in other words. And one of the things that is appreciated within the alchemists is that no matter what you are transforming, no matter what, even if you are, you know, working with a denser element and bringing it to a finer element, the extra ingredient in the process is consciousness. And consciousness is likened to the soul. It is this eternal part of ourself. And that the process of true alchemy, they said, can occur. As you refine your soul, so can you refine the essences that you work with. Because again, it's a reflection of going, as we refine what's within us, we can refine what's without us. And this is the understanding that underpins the old alchemical teachings. So within that, they identified seven stages. And very briefly, Hermes was also given the attributed to the saying that often that you'll have heard of, as above, so below. You've heard this saying before. Mm-hmm. This is like the first law of Hermes' natural laws. And it's actually more than that. It's as above, so below. As within, so without. As with the universe, so with the soul. That's actually the complete same. And this seven-step process describes this process. The first four stages work with the elements, because it understands that all matter is created from the elements, yeah? And that initially, if you're going to refine it, you have to work with purifying through the elements first. And so you have a thing that kind of like in alchemy, you have, this symbol, this one being fire, and we'll write. So that one is fire. Then you have the one that's opposite to that. And this one is water. And then you have the one again that's up, that has a line through it. This one's air. And then you have the one that's down with the line down. And this one is earth. So alchemy takes us through initially those four steps. And then when it gets to the fifth step, it comes up with this symbol. Which actually is all elements combined, because there's fire, there's water, there's air with a line through it, there's earth with a line through it. So in the unity of the elements, then you get the higher three steps of transformation. So initially you have to work with the elements individually for the first four steps, and then steps, what would be 5, 6, and 7. Will be with the integration, and in the integration it actually uses hermetic law on that. The first one is as above, so below. The second one then goes as within, so without. And then the third step is as with the universe, so with the soul. Because they said that the process of alchemy is about purifying the inner essence, which actually in the description of it is the purification of your divine nature as expressed through your soul. So that's kind of just a locator of the territory. And if you want to know more about that, and you weren't here last time, you can hear that in more depth by listening to the recording from last time. Okay. The other thing that, just to review before we go into that, is to do with this symbol that you all now have, which has the circle, the triangle, square, and then it's got an inner circle. This is a really primal symbol that holds, the square, the circle, and the triangle are very primal geometries. And when put together like very primal geometries, they're very pure. And when they put them together, they can be quite powerful, because often the nature of the work with energy, When things are very pure and simple, they hold great power. As you get them more complex, you disperse the energy, and in truth, they actually hold less power because dispersion, the energy is pushed out further. So this is a very primal symbol and is the alchemical symbol for the what they call the Philosopher's Stone. It's also known as the squared circle. It holds within it principles of the golden ratio. There's all the geometries that sit within it about phi and et cetera, et cetera. But you can look that up for yourself at some time if you wish. The essence of it describes a process. The outer circle is to do with the idea that all things exist in the whole, so the oneness. So this outer circle is like the from the totality of all of creation, so the great everything. From in that, what rises is consciousness. So the triangle is like consciousness, because within that you've got the masculine principle, which starts kind of here and transmits thought across this big space. Out of that you get the return from the feminine, so like here that's the masculine, here like the feminine, because the feminine, and so then you got this polarity, and then out of that polarity of expression of thought, reflection of thought, so that I can actually know myself, you know, be able to get that reflection, and then out of this knowing and expansion of understanding a spin one way, a spin the other way, and all of these kind of variations, then eventually you go, I understand both ends of this, and now I get the balance, I get the unification of the idea, because I can explore all that thought, and now I have a containment where I know it, and that becomes this vector, which is often expressed through this symbol, which is like the feminine with the masculine combined, which is the androgynous being, or the unified masculine and feminine. And really the principle for alchemy is actually that. So within consciousness, the principle within alchemy that we are doing through this process is balancing our masculine and feminine expressions of consciousness in order to achieve the unified consciousness. Yeah, the androgynous being of inner is its expression. So that's what's talked about by the triangle. Within this triangle, then you've got this square. Now the square represents matter or the world of form, because from consciousness, because always there's a blueprint of energy first, from consciousness it expresses itself in form. So, you know, everything forms up around an energy matrix. So in this form is here, you know, you've got fire, you've got water, you've got air, and you've got earth. Okay, as the four matrices of form. So you've got consciousness expressed through form in order to here, you've got the little circle which marries the big one, because it's the understanding that you are everything expressed through consciousness into matter, and you're here back to find your divinity. So you're here to be God, knowing itself in the form, having the experience, and so that it can actually bring its information back to God again. So here, this is the aspect of what they call divinizing the matter. In other words, realizing that we are divine within this form of matter, remembering that we actually are divine beings and therefore have these aspects of being able to refine ourselves back to what they say is like your true self or your the inner point. You know, the quest for us all is to strip away the limitations in order to come closer and closer to the more higher refined self that is within. Yeah. And so that is what's represented by that inner point, the divine spark within, and that we're bringing ourselves back to that. So that's what that symbol in generality refers to. And we'll be working with that later. For those that were not here last time, with that symbol, when we were working with it, we had like a phrase that we used to actually to express what Anna had up on her wall in the shower, you can alter it in however you want to make it flow for you, but generally it was like the outer circle was the statement within the oneness. So if you haven't got this, you might want to write that. Within the oneness is when you're tracing the outer circle. When you move to the triangle, it's going, I am a unique expression of consciousness. So this is the I am a unique expression of consciousness. So this is recognizing that you are a consciousness within this oneness. So I am a unique expression of consciousness. When you get to the square, then it's just embodied in form, or you can say embodied in matter, whatever works for you, but basically talking about the same thing, that you are embodied within this world of form or world of matter, so that you can walk around here. So embodied in form. And then the last bit, the inner circle, is divinizing matter as I refine to my true self vibration. So this process of self-realization really is what it's describing. Divinizing matter as I refine to my true self vibration. So coming to what it actually is, my true frequency, which is the frequency of my divine self. So expressing that. But that's just the idea of it, so that consciously when you're tracing it, you're addressing those different parts, understanding this is the process that you're activating. You can vary that to whatever language works best for you. Okay. All right, so today we're looking at the first step. The first step is, or the first stage, is calcination. So calcination is purification by fire. This is where it begins, this process. Why? Well, fire is an initiating element. This is the energy of fire. Fire brings power, it brings energy. Like if you're boiling water, what does it do? It oscillates the molecules. So if you're wanting to break something down or change it, initially, you actually have to break it up a bit, because into its components, so that you can go, ah, that bit I don't want, that bit I don't want, this is good. You know, you have to be able to break something up in order to be able to refine it. So, you know, even if you are making, if you're doing an alchemy with lavender to create lavender oil, which is a refinement of the essence of lavender, you will start by pulverizing the plant. You actually put the plant into the little pestle and mortar, and away you go, breaking it all up, because you have to break it up to actually separate the elements out of the oil and all the parts in order to release its parts. And so the first process of any transformation is the breaking up. Okay, so breaking up can happen through different parts. You know, it can be physical. Can be emotional, in the emotional body. It can be in the mental body. It can also, you might access it through dreams, because this is a representative of what we might call the psyche. Oops. S-Y. Yes. Just trying to remember psyche. P-S-Y-C-K-E. Okay. C-H-E. Sorry. So the psyche, which helps us to get into layers of like the subconscious and the unconscious that you can't access consciously. You might get it through your ancestral line, which in essence means that you're working with your DNA. So the prints of that sit within your DNA of your ancestors. You might get it through your soul. And so in this case, it would be like past life. So it might be your soul. Also, it could also be collective soul, race mind. Particularly, you know, at times like now where there is a large percentage of the population on the planet are facing similar pressures, you know, with the pandemic and that, it definitely brings a rise to The collective soul energies, and often we feel the wash of these as well influencing us. So where the breakdown is occurring, it will be in the area of your being that is wanting release, you know, is causing you limitation in some way. And so this breaking down helps create awareness for you of where to look. So the investigation within the calcination process, you know, whether you already, like for me, I really feel I've already been in this process, still in this process, this breaking down process, and going, yes, okay, physical, no problem. I had that fall, you know, that sense of shattering where the shock goes through the body because you have an impact, can bring a shift because energy shifts. Emotional, absolutely, you can have, you know, intensities of, you know, emotion. And this brings a bringing up of lots of things that, you know, it might actually just be old patterns and going, well, I don't even normally do this, but, you know, it's brought something to the surface because it's showing, okay, there's still residue of some of these faulty patterns that are in there, and it brings it up to your awareness. It could be mental. This could be the stories that you're telling yourself, the perceptions that you're holding and going, ah, that's it. Actually, now I look at that way of thinking about it, like Anna was talking about, that just that change of perception, because she could see suddenly with clarity that, ah, it's in my mental, how I look at it is creating my reality. And so, you know, it's in there. Like Jenna was talking about, you know, a lot of her's coming out of the dream. So there's this deep stuff that's coming out of the dream for her, showing stuff that's in that deep part of her psyche that's coming up for transformation, that's holding stuff for her to do with her safety and this ability to you know, let herself be more available, and is coming to the fore. You know, it could be ancestral. You know, I was feeling this in the seeing aspects of my mother in myself, and seeing aspects of my mother that we used to laugh and criticize, and going, oh my God, it's in me. And then going, oh, we used to, you know, go that, oh, mum always loves to play the victim, you know, about, you know, when she gets too busy, it's always like, oh, woe is me story. And I could feel it coming up in me and going, ah, ancestral print. Okay, thanks, Mum. Well, let's see if we can transform that. Soul life, you know, again, things even that you feel are not even from this lifetime that are coming forward and present in different ways. They can present through dreams, but they can also just present in experiences that, you know, affect something that's deeper in you in that way. So your investigation within calcination may be in one of those, or it actually could be in several of those. You might find several things are showing up at the same time, because of course when we hold things, we often hold it in more than one place, and particularly deep things, because particularly, you know, depending on how we have gained these impurities, if you want to say, or these limitations. Again, looking at, like Sonia was talking about, of the ages, it's the appreciation that between 0 to 7, this is a time of what they call engraving. So when things happen in that 0 to 7, they are engraved into your system, mostly because you don't have any filter. You don't have a developed emotional body. You don't have a developed mental body. You're just fully in the experience of the world. In that first cycle. So things get in very deeply, and it's very difficult to get them out through working with the emotion or with your reasoning, because they didn't go in with maturity, and so you have to be very clever at finding, sometimes you have to actually work with them physically to actually move them from the cellular memory. Then there's, you know, from that next stage, 7 to 14, this is the development of the emotional body. So they say that things that come in at this time go in with that level of embossing, you know, when you create an impression, that it's got, you know, deep impressions in you. So more possible to shift them out, but, you know, again, they've made a definite impression on your life, those things that were part of your emotional experiences during that time. And then they go, okay, 14 to 21, this is the development of the mental body, where we you know, develop our identity, our ego, and this kind of thing. And things that happen to us, traumas that we have during these go, these are like surface etchings, are just the little that characterize our ego. So again, more readily available to work with, because you can work with them through reasoning and repatterning mental patterns and things like that, because they've gone in during the time of the mental development. But it's understanding that some things are way deeper. And of course, then if you're also working with things even beyond that of soul life and things like that, then you're going to have to see how it's presenting itself as to how to work with it. Another aspect within this is that also that the part of you that's most wounded, so if it's really appearing as like emotional body, for example, that is overwhelming you, then often it's not the area to directly work in. Often you can approach it better by then coming at it from physical activity or from mental activity. You know, the same if it's, you know, a big mental thing, sometimes you can work at it emotionally, and you know, so sometimes it's, you can work at it from the area where you have most strength and wellness and togetherness to help the area that is most wounded in this particular way. So again, it's all having to bring self-inquiry as to what seems to work best for you, knowing that there are many ways to many strategies and ways to actually come at it, but we'll talk about that a little further. Okay, the next part in this is, change my pen, is looking also at limitation. Did you want something there?
No.
Oh, you're right.
Just air.
Choking? Okay. Air. All right. Within the process, and indeed in all of these stages, they recognize there are things that you can do that slow down the process or make it longer for you to transition this stage. And there's things that you can do that speed it up. Yeah. So they call, you know, things that slow it down, limitations. If you do these things, you find you're spending a long time getting through this stage. Typically within this stage, the main limitation is, you know, any form of resistance. It says, you know, things like, big list here of things like fear, obviously being afraid to actually step into it. So trying to, you know, reject it in that way, avoidance, denial. Sometimes it can be so overwhelming, you just feel shut down by it. You might go into fight or flight as a normal reaction because it pushes you into a survival mode. It could actually shut you right down to where you're actually frozen within it. You just can't do anything within it. And the other aspect in it is getting stuck in victim. So in the going into, oh, why me? And victim also tends to take you into blame. It's, you know, it wouldn't have happened if they hadn't done that, and it's their fault and they've triggered me, and, you know, so it pushes it again out. It takes it out from looking at what's happening. So these, basically, the limitation is resistance of some sort, because resistance in the end makes it, the suffering of this stage, longer and tends to make it hurt more. The advice or the action, the positive action for this stage is they go, be willing to walk into the fire rather than avoiding the change. So it's being willing to step into it, to see what is there to change in this. However, there is another part to this action which says, learn also how to control and respect the energy of the fire. Because if you step into it too, if the thing that you're dealing with is a big thing that has cooked there for a long time, when you step into it, sometimes you can step into it and absolutely get into overwhelm. The fire will burn you and destroy you because it's so big that you can't actually contain it. And all you end up doing is creating more trauma, and you actually traumatize yourself and even create deeper woundings. The other side of that is if you do too little, so if you're just like, oh, it's a little peak, and like, okay, that's enough. Sometimes you don't do enough, and so you don't actually get enough energy to actually start the transformation process. You know, you've had a little peak, but then you've backed off. And so you just spend forever taking little peaks all the time. So the navigation is actually finding the middle road between too much and not enough. is finding the middle road to navigate your way through this fire of transformation and change with enough intensity that you'll get the transformation and actually can do the inner work, but knowing when you've reached your limit and what to actually put in place or what strategies to actually employ so that you can back off from the fire for a bit and just go, oh, okay, okay, all right, okay, and then we're ready again. Okay, so sometimes you've just got to take a bite at a time and do as much as you can manage, but you really need to be cognizant of your own capacity to meet it and not, you know, be a martyr in it and just, you know, go for the big dive and went, oh, it took me down. And, you know, splat, and then you take a long time to rebuild yourself only to find that eventually you're going to have to meet the same point again. Mm. You know, because, of course, it's not dealt with, so eventually it'll come back round again. So to get through this first stage is to find the middle road, to be aware of your own capacity to manage the intensity, and to have strategies available to you that help you manage the intensity. So strategies of ways to think, strategies of ways to manage the emotion, strategies for ways that you might manage the energy in your body. Those strategies could be self strategies, or they could be strategies where you go and get help and you get supported strategies. Yeah, there's lots of ways. There's not a one way. In this, I'm going to, you know, pass it to some of you because there are some excellent strategies that, you know, many of us know about. And I was going to invite Jenna first to just talk a little bit more about the heart math strategies, because it's a really effective strategy and brilliant for when the emotion goes into overload and you can't manage it.
Yep. It's also really good when your body is releasing cellular memory, so you can't access it from anywhere. So basically the whole thing of heart math is to bring yourself to a point of coherence, so heart coherence, which you won't achieve in the first moment. So it's a focus where you focus on your heart and you imagine that your heart is doing the breathing. And for me, what I do is I imagine that I'm sitting in some central point of balance. So I actually just vision I'm sitting on a rock and the sea is just gently flowing in and flowing out. And I try and tune my breathing through the heart with that. It may not be possible when you're first in the panic of it, but I still continue to imagine I am doing it even if I'm not physically doing it. And to just go be neutral as the thought and just keep doing it. And persistence has taken me from a full-on panic attack of the body, which took 15 minutes, but it came down to neutral after doing that. And I couldn't achieve coherence for quite a while, but the fact that I kept trying to and kept imagining that I was doing it, even whether I was or not, brought me to that. The other one is I use it also sometimes for emotional or mental misalignments where I suddenly get triggered by something and I feel that I'm unsafe or some trigger like that, where I just put my hand on the heart because immediately you feel like you're being comforted. It just is. And then I start doing the same thing of the breathing through the heart, but I also then start with a little mantra of, may I be kind, may I know I'm loved, I know I'm not alone, saying this, I know I'm safe, I know I'm loved, and I walk my path with ease. So I just do that, and it just brings a level of love to that part of you. And just keep it on the heart, but imagine that from the heart it's flowing out to all parts of you, so then it's flowing through the affected place, because often your body will be reacting in some position of your body. Where it's holding. And I just do that for a while, even if it doesn't totally dissolve it. The fact that I did it and I keep doing it every time that happens gradually helps me feel that I am okay. So they're probably the two main principles of that.
Thank you, Jenna. I also want to invite Akira, master of many strategies, because she gets so much practice.
Yes, I do have many strategies. One that I'm working with a lot at the moment is called the RAIN technique, and that stands for recognize, accept, inquire or investigate, and nurture. And so obviously the first, recognizing that I'm triggered or that I'm having some kind of emotional, physical, whatever reaction, and then accepting it, saying yes to that. And that's something that I struggled with a lot for a long time, because I thought that meant I had to go, yes, this is okay, and the acceptance. And actually, it, for me anyway, it doesn't mean that. It means just simply going, yes, I'm having this experience. Yes, I am triggered. Things are happening. And then the inquire is, there's actually quite a list of things you can ask yourself. It's like, where am I feeling this in my body? What kind of posture does it need? So, because sometimes it will. What am I believing about myself at this moment? And what feelings are coming up with that belief, or that what feelings is that belief generating in me? What does this part of me need right now? And whether that's love, forgiveness, safety, there are many different things. What message does this part of me most need right now? Whether it's reassurance or some kind of healing message, that type of thing. And within that inquiry, to do the best I can to question from that wise part of myself that's also there. And I also, the hands on heart kind of thing is really useful for that. And then moving into the nurture part, because once you've kind of identified a few things, that then leads into the nurturing, where you can bring, I bring many different strategies into that, whether it's, being with. Sometimes I can be with, at that point, I can actually be with the experience I'm having and just hold that really gently and compassionately, and until I kind of either move right through it or it dissipates. Obviously using breath work to help reduce the stimulation of my nervous system at that point in time. Maybe movement. It's a whole list of different. I have things on my wall. It's like I have this chart that discernment, because all this thing about why am I having this experience, and through different aspects of myself, then what's it showing me about me through my mind, my emotions and my body, and then some different things to action in that regard. And then there's like a response chart, and then obviously the self-care and maintenance is a really important part of that as well, and a lot of that flows into the nurture part, I think.
Something else that you were saying when we'd had a conversation before, which was about the neutral point.
So for a long time, because I have really strong emotional responses, I always have. And so for me, particularly a while ago, and still in some cases now, the idea of a reframe to me was was really incongruent. It was like my whole being was saying one thing, and if I just tried to say something completely, you know, the opposite of that, it was like, no, that's not true. My whole body's going, that is not true. That is not true. And so it was really difficult to try to move into seeing it a different way or having a different belief. So I had to work with the idea of a possibility. This possibly, you know, which actually moved it into a more neutral space for me. And then, you know, could help. Yeah, once that helps to me to re-regulate myself, and then once I'm re-regulated, then that's the opportunity to go, okay, I can look at this a different way. I can, you know, find a different navigation in that.
Yeah. Yeah. So that idea of, yeah, for doing all the stages of the polarities from, so from where you've got the negative polarity coming first to the neutral point, the balance, and going, okay, just to try and be neutral with it before moving to the positive view. So it's that whole moving along that continuum rather than trying to swing from one side to the other straight up.
Can I just add one point as well? The other thing with heart math that I didn't mention is that it doesn't have to take a long time. If you're busy and at work, you can still do it. It only has to take 1 minute, literally. Mm. So you can just focus on that breathing through the heart and being in the still point while you do it, because what it does, it actually creates a chemical change in your body when you come into a more balanced heart rhythm, and it does a reset, so it resets whatever was going on back to neutral. So it's something where if you just keep applying it every time you notice that happening, it'll actually make a difference, even though it's a small thing seemingly. It actually works on a gradual basis. It was originally developed for people who are in stress as a true way of dealing with stress rather than a band-aid.
Okay. Candice, did you want to share what you'd shared with Jenna? Are you able to pass that phone a bit closer, Jenna, to Candice?
Thanks. I did a relationship warrior course, and part of it was looking at creating a kingdom within your relationship and within yourself, and with it comes a shield, and in that shield there's four different parts of our life, and if we number them 1 to 5 in relationship to what is most important, it changes everything. Number one, looking at yourself as the number one in the shield. Number two is your partner. Number three is your children. Number four is your work and your career. And number five is family and friends. And if you look at it, even in my relationship, I quite often put my children before I put my partner. So it was never going to work because we weren't working together, and so the children were generally first, and then it was my partner, and then it was family and friends, and then it was work, and then I was there down the bottom. So I think a lot of us women generally put ourselves at number 5, and so yeah, it's quite important, the number 1 to 5, to put ourselves first, then our partner, then our children, then work, and then everybody else.
That's lovely. Thanks. Does anyone else have something they think they can validly add?
I would like to say something if possible.
Yeah. So I use a very simple way of calling emotional strength. Mm-hmm. And it's virtually, we have an inherent judgment that emotion is wrong. Mm-hmm. Like, and it's virtually when the emotion comes up, it feels like it's overpowering. It actually will not. What it is a voice from your child, or, you know, that's hurt, and what it needs is someone to sit with it. Just like that, the reins. So I sit with it, and I actually do nothing. I do nothing cognitively. I just sit with it. And it comes up, and suddenly it tells me everything that needs to happen. I don't need to ask any questions. It just happens. and we'll resolve it. And that's all that can happen in the moment. And when you do that every time this happens, you develop a flexibility in response, because you also develop a muscle around feeling emotion, which is something we don't really build a muscle around. We just feel the emotion like, oh my God, we need to, you know, I'm angry, so I kick a tree. You know, like that kind of, that's what psychology has taught us, like there's an emotion and then an emotion response that's connected. They're actually not connected. You have a moment where you can stop that connection. And when you become a master of that, you actually in any moment you can respond flexibly, not black white, you know, either this or that, but you can actually have that ability to maneuver. So we use it, like I work a lot in startups. So we've got our own biotech company, and that's very tough. And you're always looking for money all the time. There's so many fears running amok, and it's high risk business. And we use that all the time so we can actually maneuver and flow rather than go into hyperdrives. That way.
All right. Just going to, like, I'm sure there are lots of strategies, and I'm sure you've all got ones that you already use and that have worked for you. It was just to try and just bring a quick idea that there's many ways of working with it, and it's just finding and experimenting with the tools. Certainly, I find that asking. If you're feeling that I have no idea what to do with this, then that inner asking of show me how to navigate this, and then watch what either drops in or what someone comes to tell you or what book pops open. You know, it's a very, it's more that the willingness to walk through the fire, as they say. So rather than just balking, it's trusting that there is a way through. And that's really what sits in the basis of it. It's trusting that there is a way through. You'll find a way. You call it in, and find your best way to navigate it. Experience is a great teacher. Sometimes, you know, you'll try things and you go, they didn't work, and that's fine, because now you know that that didn't work. Mm-hmm. And so that's one less thing to try. Reaching to your community, reaching to your friends. Again, as Janice was saying, the affirmation that I'm not alone is a really good affirmation, because often what compounds our difficulty is feeling that we've got to do it ourselves, that there's no help, that I'm all alone, I'm facing this myself, and that can actually bring up additional stress to the situation. So reaching out to community, to friends, is always so a fabulous strategy.
And I think, can I share one quickly too?
Sure.
But one thing that I do is I visualise, especially when I find myself like having some time to go on a quiet process, is I'll visualise and speak to my inner child, or like sit with it and hear what it has to tell me, whether it's my inner masculine, inner feminine. And if I have the time, I'll often like write out those affirmations so that they are real for me. And they're not too much of a bridge. And then sometimes I'll also record it on my phone, so that if I am like in a busy work day or something and I need to kind of, I could really use accessing it, I can just play it on my phone, and it's like there's a stronger part of me, my inner mother or something, speaking them to me when I really need them. So I've found those are quite powerful resources for me as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for sharing. All right. Is everyone good to... We can finish there, Jen. Thanks.